You are listening to Prometheus by a Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 10. This minute opens in Shaw's dream, and ends with the onboard computer transmitting a message to LV-223. Let's discuss the name of the ship. It's probably about time we explore that. I don't know what they were thinking originally naming the ship Magellan in the script. For one, it's hard to say. I mean, audiences struggle with the Pacific Rim Jaegers, even though Jaeger is a well-known brand of alcohol, and the name is said numerous times in the film. Don't make things needlessly complicated. Not to mention, it's just not an appealing name, though not as bad as the Nebuchadnezzar in The Matrix. Try spelling that one from memory. That is both a mouthful and a pretentious historical reference, so all in all, appropriate for The Matrix. Magellan comes from Ferdinand Magellan, a 16th century Portuguese explorer who was to be the first to circumnavigate the globe. Only he died before he reached his destination. He was killed by one of the Filipino natives, hardly a lucky name for a ship. I see where they were going with this. The crew of the Prometheus will be the first to do something extraordinary, only to face death and destruction. It just doesn't work from an aesthetic point of view. I can't confirm who thought of the name, I assume Spates. And now, if you want a nice name, the ancient Greeks have a lot to offer. Prometheus is phonetic and aesthetically pleasing. It is about as doomed as the Magellan, though. You probably know the legend, but it's worth a quick refresher here. As with most myths, there are countless minor variations, but I will stick to the broad facts. Prometheus was a Titan, which means he was part of the second generation of deities. The Greeks believed that there were several generations of gods. The first were a more primordial race of beings. They included day and night, heaven and hell, the sea, sky, and mountains, and so on. Then there were the Titans, who were followed by the Olympians. Led by Zeus, they warred against the Titans and won. The Titans were banished to Tartarus. Now, continuity is a tricky thing in mythology, so I'm not sure the order of events, but I assume sometime after this, Prometheus was like, "Fuck you, buddy," and decided to give fire to the humans. It should be noted that Prometheus is generally thought to have created humans out of clay, and some sources claim they already had fire, but Zeus took that away from them. So this is where motivation becomes a murky issue. Was Prometheus a kind of loving creator who was looking after his creations and had their best intentions in mind, or was he simply a trickster god spreading chaos as an act of revenge? As we all know, Zeus quickly found out, because fire is kind of a hard thing to miss even when you're all the way up on Mount Olympus, and proceeded to chain Prometheus to a rock where an eagle would eat his liver every day for an eternity, like the worst version of Groundhog Day ever. In some stories, Hercules is a top bloke and finally frees Prometheus, I hope also as a fuck you to his dad, and in my version of the story, he ends up dating Andy McDowell. Prometheus has come to symbolize almost two opposing concepts, one being hubris, his reach exceeding his grasp, the other, a lone visionary whose noble sacrifice led to humanity's success. I will refrain from talking too much about Lucifer, there will be plenty of time for that in Covenant, but if you are familiar with Paradise Lost, it's not hard to see parallels between Prometheus and Lucifer. Satan in the Bible is barely a character. He's just something vaguely alluded to as the adversary. Most of the contemporary understanding of Satan comes not from the Bible, but Milton and Dante. All of this ties nicely into Frankenstein, which also happens to be the first science fiction story. Now, it might be easy to think the Mary Shelley novel is anti-science, but I think a more accurate reading would be that it calls for responsible, ethical science. Victor Frankenstein is deeply arrogant and hubristic. He never gives a single thought to the welfare of his creation. He imagines the creature will be thankful for life and worship him as a god. What an idiot. Overall, it's not hard to see why Prometheus is the perfect name for this film and its ship. It ties into the themes of these prequels in a much deeper, richer, meaningful way.
Where do they go?
Everyone has their own word. Heaven. Paradise. Whatever it's called. Someplace beautiful.
How do you know it's beautiful?
Because that's what I choose to believe. What do you believe in?
That's what I choose to believe. It becomes something of a thesis of this film, but is there a choice in belief? Is that an accurate way to word it? Why not simply say, it's what I choose to believe? It's a line that's always bugged me. It feels like it's trying to be smarter than it really is. I like that our protagonist is a woman of science and faith. I think that it's an interesting dynamic and one we rarely see, despite it not being all that rare in reality. I just don't think it's handled very well. It's faith as handled by a bunch of atheists. Now, if you're curious, I was raised Catholic, but it just wasn't for me. I mean, I struggle to comprehend normal human emotions, so faith is way beyond my ability to grasp. That said, I don't claim to know all the secrets of the universe, so I can't definitively say whether there is a god or not. I suppose I would be classified as an agnostic, which I know sounds like a cop-out answer, but I am open to evidence. If some god shows up tomorrow, then guess who believes in God now? This guy. That's a bit of a tangent, but essentially the point I want to make is that I wish Shaw was a more convincing character as far as her beliefs are concerned. I have friends and relatives who are deeply religious, but they are also intelligent, progressive, and scientifically minded. There is a degree of tokenism to Shaw as far as her faith is concerned. Speaking of Shaw, I gave more thought as to why the sexualization of her character in the scripts rubs me the wrong way. I mean, yeah, obviously it's cheap and it's cheesy, but I think why it doesn't belong in Alien is that this is a franchise about sexuality, but it's never about objectification. Any sexual imagery is to further serve to heighten the horror. Ripley stripping down to her underwear, or even Ricks and Upworth in the shower, are both moments of vulnerability before a phallic alien comes along and seriously ruins their day. Plus, this is a franchise about strong women. Which doesn't mean women who are physically strong, though they are often that too. A strong character is just a believable, multifaceted, well-written character. I mean, Newt is a strong female character, even though a strong breeze would push her over. Which is definitely not a thing that has happened to me in real life. Definitely not. A common question is, why is the technology more advanced in Prometheus than it is in Alien? While it may simply be to give the film a more modern feel for a modern audience, I think it can be justified within the canon. Just like in Blade Runner 2049, there could have been some widespread technological blackout, forcing the world back into the analog age. We don't see much of Earth, but watching all these films in chronicle order gives us the impression that things are on a steady decline for humanity. Plus, the Prometheus is clearly a luxury ship where the Nostromo is an old mining vessel. It would be akin to comparing a cruise liner to a naval ship. We cut to David heading towards the basketball court while the Raindrop Prelude by Chopin plays softly in the background. As far as I can tell, there is no deeper significance intended in this song, but classical music is often used in film to imply that a character is cultured or intelligent. Most often, these characters are also villains. I suppose it's to show that they are aloof and hard to connect to. All of this works well for David. However, in real life, apparently sociopaths prefer rap music to classical music. I'll put a link to the relevant article in the footnotes. This song is 255 years old by the time David listens to it. Why he's listening to something so ancient, I don't know. I mean, Kanye West would be classical music by 2093. Could you imagine no Church in the Wild in this scene? Human beings in a mind. What's a mind to a king? What's a king to a god? What's a god to a non-believer who don't believe in anything? Perfect. Basically, this was a case of movie shorthand. This song implies things about David's character. There's the duality of the connection between villains and classical music, juxtaposed with how calm and serene the song is. It implies to me that he is a beautiful, cultured character, but there is something uneasy about him. There is also a balletic quality to the scene. It's enchanting, so the song is fitting on a sensory level too. One of my favourite moments here is when David suddenly stops and inspects something on the floor. I wonder what it is. He's the only one around. I don't imagine much debris floating about. There's something kind of funny about this moment. It shows he's curious, observant, fastidious, and again, his mannerisms are fascinating. It's amazing that every screen, every panel, every light on this ship is practical. While the technology is anachronistically futuristic, the interior of the ship itself echoes the Nostromo.
Good morning, David. Transmitting message. No response.
The onboard computer has a male voice. Is that Father? This is the voice of Robin Atkin Downs. He's a voice actor who's done a ton of things. He's best known for doing creature vocals. You might be a bit surprised to learn that many animal sounds in movies are not generated by real animals, but by humans. This minute ends just before we finally get a proper close-up on David's face, a completely neutral expression as he checks if the engineers have responded to their signal. Which I'm really curious about how that works if the ship is moving faster than light. Something something quantum entanglement. Damn it, Jim, I'm studying a Bachelor of Arts, not science. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.